in our columns.
Yeah, probably, but I don't remember.
That's the wild bush.
But they grow up like that, and they have them buried on.
But now there's some trees, like these pump trees and things down here, you don't want those around because that doesn't make good honey and all, and it's hard
and
on the
bees. Honey or sour or something.
And so there are certain places that you are careful where you place your beehives that they're in the right location, if, you know, for the palmetto honey and for the...
But now a lot of people.
Yeah. And a lot of the farmers and different things like that like to have the bees around because they help pollinate. Especially years ago when we had a lot of small farming.
Well, they still do. They hire. They pay people to bring the, to put their hives out there. But now a lot of people don't like to do that because they spray. A lot of things, the first thing you know, they'll have to kill them bees if they spray the wrong thing.
Yeah, but years ago when we had a lot of small farmers. The small farmers years ago, this was a matter of survival for them and all because the bees helped pollinate and all of this kind of stuff.
Well, you have
and
to have
so it's changed. Yeah. Big farming has changed the whole outlook just about on everything.
But nearly every one of them, if you notice, they've got people that, and they a lot of time they'll pay them so much to put their hives out there.
Mm-hmm. Because of the pollination.
Yeah. Well, if it, especially the watermelons and a lot, well, most anything, if it's not pollinated, it won't grow. Won't mate.
And corn, different things like that. Of course, that tossing the wind blows out a lot, but there's a lot of things that the bees being around it makes a lot of difference in the way that it produces.
Yeah.
But you don't think about it nowadays as much as you did years ago when, as I say, my father was a farmer and I grew up on a small farm, and everybody in the area we were in had maybe 70 or 80 acres, and out of that they would produce several different varieties of vegetables.
Now, where was this? Was this here?
At Micahead. And the market was in Wauchula, and you would go and get in line. You would pack your vegetables, if you had pepper, if you had cucumbers, tomatoes, green beans, or potatoes. You would go, and I've seen this huge shed lined up just as thick as it could be with a truckload of different vegetables, and they had the buyers there, and those trucks would go through just like you would go to an auction now for cattle. Those trucks would drive through and they would tell them they'd have to register it and they'd know exactly what was on it. The buyers would get down and check it all out and look it over good and start bidding on, and that was the way they sold most of their produce. And there's nothing like that anymore, hardly.
At least you've got a farm market, what you.
But a lot of the buildings are covered in the shed. I don't think.
Well, I know that, but I mean, they still use them. Of course, they still. Yeah. Lee's fella, he farmed with. They take all their stuff to watch you. One thing I remember about my daddy, and he talked about bees. He died when I was 10 years old, but he borrowed my granddaddy. He was sick for years and had cancer and stuff. But he borrowed grandpa's old horse, and I rode with him. And he was hunting bee trees. And what he'd do, you'd see that bee coming by, and he'd, what's called a bee line.
Yeah.
Okay, now he'd sight that bee as far as he could see it.
Yeah.
He'd go down there and catch it and sight it again. And I remember he found at least four or five trees the day we went with him,
wow,
that I was with him. And what he'd do when you find a tree, he'd take his knife and he'd cut his brand, or he'd put an L on his. And he marked that tree,
that,
and then, well, when somebody else come along and found a tree, well, he said, well, somebody else already got this tree.
So how did you get the bees out?
You saw the tree down.
And the bees would move then, see,
yeah,
make a new...
Yeah, and they move on you.
The Australian aboriginals, Australian bees are not stingless. Australian bees. And you know what they do? The honey's very old. It's the only sweet thing they have, because they grow no fresh. They smoke them out. The bees usually...
Well, they do that here, but...
That's to keep them from biting you so bad.
A lot of them are up high.
That's to keep them from biting you so bad here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
A lot of them are scare up high them and you can't get to it, see. And what they do, they get a bunch of them, they take a bunch of wash pan, dish pan, or wash tub, you know, and you, after you got it on the ground, well, you'd put some kind of a smoke and smoke them away from it.
Right.
And then you go in there and cut that honey out of that tree and put it in your barrel or wash pan or dish pan or whatever it was.
But this would get the wax and all, so the bees had to start completely over again, and that queen bee has to be protected too. That queen bee, without the queen bee, you don't have anything.
That's right. You lost the book.
Well, that was Ellen Hawkins, the girl from Tampa.
Yeah.
Well, she was first cousin, and Grandpa, when they come, they wanted to ride the horse. Well, I was a country boy, and so Grandpa said, "Brian, said, you go catch the horse." And this old Nellie, the old cream mare I was talking about, well, she would, you had to catch it with a bucket of feed. So I'd take a bucket of feed, and I'd hide the bridle behind me, you know, till I got up there to her. So I eat up there to her, you know, and let her get her head in the bucket, and then I'd reach over and catch her by the mane and put the bridle on. Well, this time she outsmarted me a little, because she eat some of the feed, and then all of a sudden when I started to reach, she just whirled. And her whole hoof hit me right in the top of the head and just knocked me near about out. And I told Ellen, I said, "Don't tell Grandpa." And so we didn't ever tell him. I never did tell him about it hitting, but the print of her foot was in the top of my head for a long time. I told him I was reading it down on sin. Knocked all that.
You're lucky they're really.
But one had killed.
Place.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, could have killed.
But
or just left you. You know.
I went on and got some more feed, and I called the old mare. We rode her. Before it was over, you know. I'd always put it. Still am. But then we had a little old horse that my daddy had bought, and the kid dog would ride him, and we'd go down the road, and if you fell off that horse, he'd stop dead still, kind of like a little old horse you
so
had.
You stop off of her, and she'll stop.
She stops.
I bought Kim a little Shetland pony when she was 5 years old. And she enjoyed it. The first 2 weeks she got the money worth out of it, because she sat on top of that horse most of the time. We had her feeding in the yard and not hanging, but she was still sitting up there. And she started the little old mare. What was her name?
Pumpkin,
yeah.
Pumpkin.
When Pumpkin went under the orange tree and she brushed Kim off, and that was the maddest little young one you ever seen. Like, that the horse don't know nothing. I told her, I said, honey, the horse can go under the tree, but you got to guide him around the tree to keep him from coming off.
He was safe. He didn't realize
she was
sticking up high.
She was just as nice and gentle as she could be. She'd just
she
go down and wait for her. But she was nice.
I got knocked off. We're just trotting, boom. Oh, dang. I got the grandpa, now it knocked me off.
Yes, and that old
so
horse.
That's kind of a pet, and for you to ride and stuff.
Yeah, she was. She had a heartworm or something, though, and she died in about a year or so.
Oh.
But then they've got this one.
Oh,
this now is this one. Is another one.
Oh, I wonder.
Her daddy and mama bought this from Shuggy.
Right.
And,
but the horses that you kept then were for things like pulling. Like
what
a
I used for
like
a plow. For
so
garden,
we
garden.
Tractors.
You didn't have mechanized.
Mm-hmm. No. And you had to stand behind the plow to the horse had to pull the plow down the road.
That's one of the first jobs
like
I
small farms.
First job that I ever got in the summer was plowing an old horse for Charlie Boyd, and it was a devil shoestring. And devil shoestrings, I don't know if you know what they are or not, but they grow down in the ground, and they got a little knob on the end of it, and when that tip of that plow hangs on that, it drags. And I had just had an operation and had my leg broke the summer before. And I wasn't very
didn't
strong.
Did you have a polio or something?
Yeah, but that's beside the point.
Now, how old were you then? I was
about 14 or 15.
Yeah.
But the fella gave me $1 a day. And I started at sun up and plowed to sundown. And it was just across the river over here. And they planted chufas in the place. And that's the kind of weeds you got them days. You didn't. I worked in a strawberry field. For $4.50 a week, 7 days a week from sunup to sundown.
We used to get paid but, 3 cents in cord.
Well, what I did.
And you had a number that you put in the bottom of your cup.
And that, when they got through, they would count however many, whatever your number was, however many you picked, and they paid you 3 cents a quart for all the quarts that you picked.
Works are the fastest figures, the more experience you got, the more money you make.
Right.
Yeah. But they let me. I missed school a few days, you know, and I picked 54, which was a dollar and a half, was a lot of money. And then the fella never did pay me. That was not very much fun.
That's terrible.
Yeah, especially for children.
But we had. Was it just because you were young?
He paid. He did a lot of people. He didn't pay that way. He was just that kind of man, and that's where he got out. But we had, after he missed school and then didn't get to do it either.
So you started, everybody started to work early, huh?
Oh, yeah, we had to.
Well, strawberries was always a sure crop whenever I was growing up, and we always had a patch of strawberries. And I don't know why, because we could have worked much better if we'd have went to work a little bit later, but when it got a certain time of the morning, us children, my father got his children up, and we went to the strawberry patch. But daylight, when the sun come up, we were already in the field. And I've seen it when you run your hands over the bushes to pull the leaves up to pick the berries, and your hands, you could only pick 6 or 8 bushes, and you had to go to the end of the row and warm it up by a fire because you would just about freeze, and your hands would just turn red. But we had to be there at that time every morning. I still say if we'd waited till the sun come up, warmed the bushes, we could have got through just as fast.
Might have, but they want what they wanted to do.
You had to get to town.
Had to get to the market.
Right. By a certain time.
And that was the reason they had to go.
And so what was the market then? They went to Wauchula?
Wauchula.
From Micah Head, they went to Wauchula. And my mother packed them. You don't see berries packed anymore, but in those days, you had a certain size crate that you put them in, and you bought certain size pots that you packed them in. You put the smaller berries in the bottom, and then you put the big capers on the top.
I know all about that. That's the way they come when I buy them.
Yeah, and that was the way that they were shipped, and they would buy, they had buyers out there then, just like with the other, and you went through, and they bid on different prices. But it didn't take the buyers long to know who was putting good berries in and who was putting.
Sure. What they did a lot of times.
Of course.
Yeah.
What they did a lot of times, they
would go bad if they were not cold right.
What they did a lot of times, they'd take them and they just take it, dump it out, and look under it.
And they would learn.
Put it back, and they didn't take. You know, if they happened to catch one that was bad, you'd put in one bad, and they caught it. Well, then you didn't get nothing much. You know, you just didn't get.
And they'd learn too to pull back into the middle of your boxes of. Berries too, and then maybe they would open a side up and reach into the center and pull a box out to double check them to make sure that they were good berries all the way through. We always made sure ours were good, and my father would be so proud because when we'd get the 12 cap layer, when they had 12 big berries on the top, to him that was the perfect cup of berries, and that's usually the ones that brought the most money too. And all sometimes you'd get them where they would be. Maybe 9 would go on the top, but that would have to be all the big berries. Usually you could put 12 on the top of them. And there was a special type of pack and all, and the children would pick, and my father would supervise and help pick a little bit along too, and then he would pick them up. We'd leave them in the middle of the row. We'd have 2 rows of plants on the bed, and we'd put them in the middle of the row. And he would get them up, take them up to my mother, and she would dump them in and wash them, and we had a... Every year he'd go through and cut the palmetto stalks and make a bin where it would be just the right height for her so she wouldn't have to stoop so much. And you would wash those berries, pick them up with a colander, and spring them out over this bin for the water to drip off of them. And then pack them in the pints, put your cappers on them, and put them in your crates. And it was always a sure money crop, and all it was big money, but we knew we would have to have some money coming in. But it was hard on us kids.
Is that all big growers now, the strawberry?
Yeah, most of it
is picked, and I don't think they even send them out like they do anymore, and all as far as packing. I haven't seen them in years where they packed and put them in crates like they used to.
But what you're talking about was a family.
Operation.
And
didn't hire anybody else.
What was this? We're talking 1920.
I was about smaller than Kim.
Oh, about
37 or 38.
Yeah, it was 30s. 30s and 40s, but all through the 30s.
Well, yeah, most of the 30s. But we had a strawberry school when I graduated my school. And I graduated in 39, so along there was 38, 39.
Well, when
40.
I was...
And that means that you were out of school.
We went to school in the summer.
Because if you could get your first pound of berries by Christmas, you were really doing good, because they would gear them, and by January the 1st, you usually would get a few pints, and then January and February and March would be your main picking months. Yeah.
Well, they get too hot, well, the berries don't bear anyway. You know, they get bad and start to bear.
And we wanted to be sure that when they got to where they made us go to school in the wintertime, it really hurt the small farmers, because the children
had to use the family.
Had to use the family. And it didn't hurt us. I think we grew up as healthy and as strong as we had the more of a value of what a growth was really all about than anything else. But we did an awful lot of this. One day I was picking in the field, and it seemed like I got draggier and draggier. At the end of the day, you know, about 1 or 2 o'clock, and we should have been through, and we were not quite through. And the neighbors got through because we used the pool together, and everybody, one would take one time, one the other, and we'd put them all together. And it was my father's turn to take the berries off, and we hadn't picked them up yet to take them all.